to do that. And if we have, I'm sorry, baby, I can't really remember, but I know that I did some work with him before, like video or something like that.
Right.
Yeah. He's lovely, very lovely.
Well, we will all be looking for you on Facebook and Instagram, as well as all
Thank
over the
you.
YouTubes and following your career as you go forward. Thank you so much, Liv Warfield, being a guest today. I really
Thank
do appreciate
you.
Your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning in to the program today. Past episodes of Times Like Now can be found wherever you get your podcasts. Special thanks to Anthony Karras for audio technical support today, as well as the letter J, Cody Robertson, for original theme music. My name is Trevor Collins. I can be reached, trevor@timeslikenow.com. Thank you once again for listening, and I look forward to speaking with you all next time.
Andy Wawo looks a scream, hang him on, I whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy Wawo, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are Mariana Ramirez. She's the director of the Jordan Schnitzer Museum of Art at Portland State University, and Edmund Holmes. He's an artist and designer. And they're here to talk about Black Lives Matter Artist Grant Exhibition, which runs now through April 30th at PSU. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Mariana and Edmund.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Mariana, you run the gallery, which is a beautiful new gallery, and then you inherited this show. Jordan Schnitzer gave the money to artists to produce work, and it was in the wake of the rise of Black Lives Matter within 2020. Is that correct?
Yes, this exhibition was one of the first ones that I had the privilege to work on. The artists had been selected by the jury, which our jury was comprised of faculty, students, and a local community member at PSU. And so I had the very fortunate job of introducing myself to the winning applicants and sending them a check. So I think I came in at a pretty good time.
What was Jordan Schnitzer's motivation, and what were the criteria for getting in the show?
Jordan created the Black Lives Matter Artist Grant Program in the summer of 2020. He was deeply affected, as we all were, by the murder of George Floyd. And he wanted to do something for his local community. And he is a well-known philanthropist and art collector, and really wanted to work with the people that he supports most, which is our artists. So he created this granting program to award artists $2,500 to support recent or new work. We're now putting on the exhibition of the 20 winning artists. This award went to the three museums that are named after Jordan Schnitzer. There's one at Washington State University, one at the University of Oregon, and then here at Portland State University. For Portland State University, we welcomed applications from artists from the surrounding five counties surrounding Portland.
So as you go into the show, on the right, you can't really miss this really big oil painting, and it's called The Collective Mourn. And it's several people holding what looks like a dead body or a dying person. The women are mourning the death of the man. And it's by Sade Du Bois, and she was at PNCA. And this is a kind of a grand painting that being in a show gave her the chance to work on this scale. Is that correct?
Correct. Sade is a figurative painter. Prior to winning this award, though, the majority of her work was much smaller. She has this really wonderful practice where She paints one figure a day, but it's generally a very, you know, smaller 6x8 inch portrait painting, or smaller than that even. And so this award, she has said, really, you know, inspired her to go bigger. And she wanted to capture the collective mourning, as she calls it, that Black women have. We see the pain and exhaustion and struggle that these women have on their faces. And it's a very beautiful grand painting. And Sade wanted to honor the women in her life. So that you see that when you walk into the museum. And that was something that Sade and I had a conversation about, was whether, you know, for me, this painting really kind of captured the heart of the program of the exhibition of Black Lives Matter. And police brutality is definitely one of the themes that comes up a lot throughout the artists in the exhibition. So she and I had a discussion about whether this should be kind of on the front wall when you first walk in, and really, for me, it kind of captures the exhibition. But we also had, you know, wanted to offer her the option of putting it in a more quiet, contemplative space in the museum in case people needed to be a little bit more reflective while looking at it. So we looked at a couple options and, you know, felt comfortable that putting it on the main wall that you can see even before you enter the museum was really important for the artist and really for the exhibition.
So she used a lot of black in the paint. People are wearing black. Their skin tones are pretty dark. There's these highlights of gold jewelry. Did she talk to you at all about the palette that she used?
She wanted to create a timeless painting. You know, if you look at that, you can't necessarily pick up what era or what decade we're in. She did ask all of the models when she was scheduling the photo shoot to wear either black or white clothing of their choice. And then they had the photo shoot in Peninsula Park. From there, she worked from that photograph on this really, really beautiful painting.
Edmund, I know it's not your work, but what do you think of that painting? Because it's very in your face, and it's also kind of tragic. It sets that tone of that year when there was a lot of lamentation and mourning.
I thought it was very impactful walking into it. You instantly feel like the energy of it. And then you also recognize there's a dead body there, but there's a community mourning, not just like one individual. I think the impact was very good or strong. And then even the color palette that was used, it wasn't like super bright colors everywhere. It was like just a little darker, which kind of has like the representation of what's going on or like what was going on at the time.
As you move into the gallery, there's another striking piece. So we just talked about a very kind of traditional painting. This one is more like installation art. It's a long down coat, sort of like, you know, football coaches wear in the winter. This is a very long down coat, but it's made out of different horizontal bands of brown and white, I think. And then below it is a little platform. And there are all these little plastic, brightly colored, day glow, funny little shapes, which I found out are jewelry, bangles, earrings, things like that. What's the significance? Because you can tell the coat is custom made. You know, it's kind of like sleeping bag material. It's been cut up into sections.
Sure. So that work is by Julia Bond. So Bond is a designer who's created her own line called Otherly. And the coat you're mentioning, it's 12-foot tall coat. It's like a puffer jacket material. And it's suspended from the ceiling. And the coat is comprised of these different bands of color that explore the range of skin tones. And so I think Bond is really clever. Her work, rather, I should say, invites viewers into conversations about being Black through the choice of colors and textiles. And Bond recently actually had a show called Pink, Purple, Polka Dotted last October. I think what's really cool about her artwork is that she uses clothing to confront statements. So for instance, with that exhibition, she was confronting the statement we often hear people say that I treat all people the same, whether they are Black, brown, purple, pink, or polka dotted. And through you know, her choice of clothing and fashion, she challenges that particular statement by people, you know, confronting the idea that people think they're blind to race. And with the jewelry underneath, really love the way she asked us to display it. So we have it on a riser that's covered in AstroTurf, and she has her brightly colored jewelry coming up. And as she said, she wants it to kind of like spring up like flowers or like daisies.
Is the idea to talk about different shades of skin color?
Correct. With this particular coat, yes, you know, the idea is it has all these different flesh tone colors, different bands going up and down the coat. And it's also a 12-foot coat. It's not actually necessarily wearable in that sense. I know some of Julia Bond's clothing is like that. And the way she explained it to me was that, you know, she wants people to stop and think for a minute, spend a little bit of time on her clothing, even if, you know, to think about how would you wear that or would you wear that. But also, you know, we're so quick in society to walk by people, to walk by art, that she wants people to stop and think and really spend a little bit of time. And by kind of going to these outrageous lengths, like a 12-foot tall coat, you know, does make people stop. And it's definitely something that I think our audience really enjoys.
Mm-hmm. Now, Edmund, you've got 4 panels on the wall. They're very poppy. You know, these are like, they look kind of like street art. They're very bright, cartoony. But then when you look closer, you see their faces looking out from them. So the shapes you're looking at are actually some kind of costume, like a mascot thing or like a mask. What is the name of this series and what's the medium you're using there?
The name of it is Black Shield. And then I used acrylic and like paint markers, acrylic markers to execute everything. Did 4 of those and then also had a sculpture that complemented it.
Try and describe the 4, yeah.
It's pretty much Black Shield 1, 2, 3, and 4. And the overall thought is that because everything was so heavy, 2020, 21, it's just trying to figure out a way to deliver and have a conversation in a new way. Because we've seen the fist and then everything's like could be a lot darker, but I wanted to have a conversation. So putting the Black person in the focal point, so center of the canvas, and then having it protected or surrounded by these pop art things that most people would be gravitated toward. So if I put a cartoon character body around it, you would be gravitated to the cartoon character first and then focus on that. But then it's just trying to make it normal to where it's like, we should be accepted. It shouldn't be a weird conversation or like, you shouldn't belong here or you don't, your life isn't as valuable. So just trying to have a conversation in a different way.
Do you use these characters somewhere else, you know, like in a comic book or were they just one-offs?
They just started popping up in 2020. And it was just myself trying to like figure out what type of conversation can I have that's not like a in your face, but it's still like a conversation where you can address people or have a softer introduction into the world of my perspective. I literally just started creating and just started building off of it. Like even in the background, I did Garfield, but it's still the same conversations. Like people love Garfield, you should love me too. It's all the same.
Whatever room you're in, you got a different one in the background. Mm-hmm. It's Garfield. Is he got his thumb up?
Thumb up with the meatball, his tongue around the spaghetti. Uh-huh. I loved Garfield when I was younger, so that's when I started drawing. It's the same thing. It was just if I took any character, Ninja Turtles or any SpongeBob, and put the overall body, people like that character, and then you put my type of face into it or different pigments in it and try to have the conversation about that.
But then the mouth, is it Garfield's mouth that's open with the teeth?
Everything's supposed to protect you, the bright colors, the big blobs around you. And it's also the way I think about going into the world sometimes is like you have to present yourself in a different manner to where people feel comfortable about it. So sometimes I speak to everybody, most people that I walk past, because I want them to feel comfortable, because I know sometimes people don't feel comfortable because of my pigment. So it's just like addressing that, but in a different manner.
Mm-hmm. How did conversation with strangers change then after George Floyd? I mean, you know, white people woke up. That's the kind of the word went mainstream with that. White people woke up to what was happening and started, you know, trying to change things or at least talk about it and talk to everyone. How did that affect you?
I felt it's time for it, and it's about time. It's necessary because it's something that we live with every day and have to encounter. But it's also, I appreciate it because it's like I've done artwork around the city, and it's just I never had conversations like this before where I can talk to somebody that's not the same race as me and actually address it, or them asking me questions, and it's opening up a dialogue in a new way. Like art, that's what art is for too, to have conversations that probably harder conversations than people really are willing to have.
Mm-hmm. Is that your day job, designer?
Yes.
What do you design?
I design shoes, footwear. Been doing it for a long time.
Oh yeah? Who for? Yeah.
For Nike.
Oh, okay.
Anything
I've ever worn?
I've done training shoes. I work.
We're
on
talking the sub $100 category.
Potentially, I've done a handful of shoes.
What have you done?
Volleyball, a little bit of basketball, a lot of training shoes,
mm-hmm.
A lot of Jordan lifestyle and training shoes. I'm in Jordan right now working on some more shoes. Some of my shoes were in the Olympics for volleyball.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Durant did a shoe with some artwork on his thing. So that's also art that translated to the basketball court, which is cool.
Mm-hmm. Your other piece in this show, the BLM grant show at PSU, is a sculpture. Could you just say a bit more about that?
Yes. It has been something that I've been wanting to do for a very long time. I've always wondered what my artwork would look like in 3D. So I literally just said, let's try to make this. So it's taking one of my characters and then just bringing it to life, like what it would look like if it was in 3D. I feel like it's very impactful to have things in 2D, but also it could be a little bit more grander or impactful to have it in 3D where you can walk around and see it come to life in a new way.
Mm-hmm.
So the approach was that got it 3D modeled and then printed as a 2-foot model. And then had some of my friends here in Portland help me, a guy from Case the Base, Ezra, he helped me make a mold out of it because I wanted to replicate it. And just started learning how to build that. So bringing that to life and then just, I don't know, like that's what how it turned out.
Did you 3D print it and then make a mold and make a bigger version? Is that what I had?
It was 3D printed, make a mold to replicate it. So I will still have the original and I can do iterations of,
mm-hmm.
and then made the final version of it. That's in the exhibit right now.
I love that sculpture. It looks really cool. And I think audiences really resonate because the painting is inspired or the character is right behind it. So that's really cool. I think in particular, the way that you captured the figure, the Black person in the middle, I feel is you see a little bit more of maybe the exhaustion, or you get a better sense of that person in the 3D. I think that, you know, your series is really, for us, you know, when we're talking with audiences, we talk a little bit about code switching. And I was wondering if you could mention that a little bit.
I don't know the term completely, code switching.
Oh, just sort of, I think kind of what you mentioned, but when you have to, you know, really put on like a... happy face, big character, like in order to be socially acceptable in white culture.
I think that whole thing is just, you to me and what I've experienced is that people like to know what you're thinking, how you're feeling, and what's going on, and what's your next move. And I think that intimidates a lot of people, different cultures and everything. So it's pretty much a way of just like being accepted, like, oh, I gotta turn this face on and make everything's good, I'm happy, so I can move on, and like you can move on, and I can continue my life. It's just try like almost faking a funk so people are satisfied with your presence or what's going on.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are Mariana Ramirez and Edmund Holmes, and they are talking about BLM Artist Grant Exhibition, which runs at the Jordan Schnitzer Museum through the end of April. Mariana, there is a piece of work that looks like a bullet, but it has the engraving of slaves in the hold of a slave ship transposed on top of it. Mm-hmm. Whose work is that?
That's Elijah Hassan. He has three pieces in the exhibition, actually. That piece, as well as a photograph downstairs, and then another digitally illustrated work.
Mm-hmm. So that's more of the kind of death and horror theme. You know, it's like this is a dark, terrifying subject. But then just, you know, a few feet away, there's this big pink fluffy cloud just kind of floating there on string. Whose work is that?
So that's Amira Chapman. And Amira has two works in the show, that cloud piece. And then in the wall right behind that, there's a diptych of two Black women with this sort of like heavenly landscape with this really beautiful pastel color palette. But with Amira's cloud piece, Chapman's cloud piece, it's really interesting because, you know, initially you go up to it and it has these kind of colorful lights on it. And then you may mistakenly think that it is kind of like a more lovely, lighthearted piece. But as you get closer, you realize that this cloud is hanging from a noose, and that the lights are actually red and blue, like from a police car lights. So really, Amira did a lovely job putting that together. And I think it looks really nice next to the diptych that she has, two women, again, in this heavenly landscape. And with that piece, it's called Heavens Probably in Phoenix. And that one, Amira's really does a beautiful job, not only portraying this sort of heavenly landscape, but she has fruit coming down from that. And part of the correlation there is the idea that as fruit can be very easily bruised, so can the bodies of Black people.
There is a video piece downstairs in the corner by Annika, spells her name A-N-A-K-A, and all the A is a capital. So she's in this forest dancing. She's dressed in like white clothes, and then she has percussion around her, and she's got a sort of hippie chick kind of necklace thing on, and it's kind of very piker, but really you don't expect to see a Black woman doing this. You know, it's kind of hippie stuff, but she's there making all these kind of ethereal noises and singing beautifully. Who is Annika? Where does she, where does she come from?
So Annika is an interdisciplinary artist, and she has studied healing and rituals from communities around the world. And she uses that knowledge to create her own spaces of healing. So she'll put on these small intimate performances as a way to create safe places, create healing spaces. And she will put these videos on her website called Activate Portal. And the one that's in the exhibition is titled Activate Portal 2. And it is a site-specific meditation on the act of returning home. So she filmed this in April Hill City Park this past August, which that's in Southwest. I was there. It was so cool to be able to sit there and listen to her performance. And then they recorded at the same time to capture the performance for this exhibition.
Edmund, what do you think of this idea that there's a kind of art that white people want black people to make right now, and it has to address certain things, and then there's other art which is black people just doing whatever they want, you know, doing art? Does that sound realistic to you?
Let me see if I understood it right. White people wanted black people to make certain types of art, and then black people just creating art for themselves or for
the people. Yeah, not focusing on race particularly.
I think it could, depending on what it is, it could get tricky, like the conversation, but I feel like it's important and it's appreciated that they would want to know more or like see your perspective, because it could be a new way of like having conversations. Because you don't want to use people just to appropriate them and have them like do stuff just for my entertainment, but it's a way, like, just with this whole opportunity, it's like having a new avenue to talk with more people differently, which is amazing thing. Like, I wouldn't have shown these paintings in this museum with this opportunity and probably having the foot traffic that it does. So, and people being able to see it and think about, like, why did I do this? Or why did all these others do, other artists do the same thing or different type of subjects addressing these matters? But then just as an artist just creating, I think people, like, we all want to voice our thoughts and how we feel. And I think that's also important. Anytime you can get more people understanding your perspective and also bring a conversation up that people don't understand and introduce them to something, I think it's a good opportunity.
I can jump in and talk about Kyra Watkins for a minute. Kyra's another figurative painter in the exhibition, and I think their series, they have small children. These were the paintings on Masonite. And she's depicted children holding protest signs, and I think it's really interesting her perspective that she's taken in this exhibition or with the series. She's taken the phrase "from the mouth of babes" and thinking about how would we treat people that are protesting if they were children, or would we listen more if there were children asking us to treat us humanely, to treat to be fair, you know. So her the children are holding up different signs, and, you know, I think Kyra did a really, you know, thoughtful job of trying to get us to think about, you know, some of the things that Black people are asking for, being treated fairly and justice, and, but then she puts it with small children. It's really, really cool piece.
That's a good one. And because from a young age, you presented a certain way, or your parents teach you certain subjects on how the world sees you.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week were Mariana Ramirez. She's the director of the Jordan Schnitzer Museum of Art at Portland State University. And Edmund Holmes. He's an artist and designer. And they were talking about Black Lives Matter Artist Grant Exhibition, which runs through the end of April. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Mariana and Edmund.
Thank you.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver scream. Can't tell them apart at all. Thank you.
Comunitaria a través del 90.7 FM KBOO Portland y en línea a través de KBOO.fm.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en